Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Estonia's Prime Minister Kaja Kallas has urged NATO allies to heed the lesson from 1938 and 1939 and give more resources to Ukraine as Vladimir Putin's troops advance further into the east of the country. Now, Estonia, like other Baltic states, Poland and Finland, fear that victory in Ukraine could prompt Russia to turn its attention westwards. For more on this, I'm joined by Donal Bacon, who's Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government in DCU. And first, Evelyn Caldoya, who's head of the foreign desk at the Postimees newspaper in Estonia. Evelyn, thank you for being with us this morning. Will you describe the mood in Estonia at the moment as the tide of the war currently seems to be turning in Russia's favour?
Well, I think people are somewhat fearful all the time, ever since 2014, when the invasion in eastern Ukraine started and when Russia annexed Crimea. So I think there is a general fear on the background. Ever since then, it only increased on 24th of February 22. But on the other hand, we have spring, so I think people may not be thinking about the war in Ukraine that much today, because the sun is shining and people have kind of adapted with living with slight fear on the background.
Okay, well, the sun always makes people feel a little bit better, but I'm sure that warning from your prime minister to other NATO countries has raised eyebrows. Do you think there's a feeling in Estonia that other countries aren't treating the war with the urgency that it deserves?
I think it depends on the country, and we must admit that even big countries in Western Europe have done many things to help Ukraine. They have sent even fighter planes, tanks, armored vehicles. They have also agreed to support Ukraine's accession talks with the EU. They have given macro-financial assistance to the EU. So we cannot say that they haven't been doing nothing. They have been doing nothing. They have done a lot. But the thing is that we have to remind people that we cannot just rest on our hands because, well, Russia is still doing more and more and more, and Russia is putting everything on that card. And it's a big country, and they don't seem to care about their people, and the cost of human life doesn't seem to matter there. And they are spending a lot on war economy, defense expenditure would be unacceptable to any European. Mm-hmm. So we are facing quite a harsh enemy.
Okay, so the fear is that if Russia is successful and seizes control of Ukraine or a sizable part of Ukraine, that countries like your own could be next.
It could be, yes. And people, that's the thing that at one point Russia may want to test NATO's willingness to defend its borders. Of course, we hope that NATO looks convincing enough that they wouldn't try, but still people in my country are, despite the economic difficulties we are facing now, all in favor of increasing defense expenditures because we are fearful of that.
Mm-hmm. There is in Estonia a notable minority who either speak Russian or identify as Russian. Is that leading to any tensions on this issue within your country?
Usually not, because also among the Russian speakers, you have different groups. You have also Ukrainians. Nowadays, you have many Ukrainian refugees who have been fleeing from the war. Of course, you have some people who romanticize Russia and the Russian president, but I think you can't see that much of it in public discussion. It's more or less unified. And yeah, you can't ignore those voices, but they are not that loud.
But you're in no doubt that there is even a low-level fear amongst people there that Russia might not stop at Ukraine.
Yeah, it's higher than low-level. Mm-hmm. It's definitely higher than low-level. Otherwise, people wouldn't be supporting defense. They wouldn't be in such a consensual agreement that there have to be high defense expenditures, and people also are happy to keep the conscription system, and many people voluntarily participate in defense leagues activities to be ready to stand up for our country should it be necessary.
Okay, preparations are being made. Evelyn Caldoa, head of the foreign desk at Postimees newspaper, thank you for joining us from Estonia. And listening to all that is Donika Obakon, as I said, who joins us from the Department of School and of Law and Government and Politics, indeed, at DCU. So, Donika, the Prime Minister of Estonia, as I said, suggested that we need to heed the lesson of 1938 and 39, that we could be in a similar situation now in Europe as was the case before World War II. Do you agree with her assessment?
I do. And, you know, it's certainly the case if you're looking from the vantage point of Estonia, the threat is very real. I mean, Estonia is about half the size of Ireland in terms of size. Its population is smaller than that of Dublin. And it emerged as an independent state at the same time Ireland did after World War One, and it had, as Ireland did, you know, ambassadors, League of Nations membership and all that. And then it was followed up by the Kremlin 20 years later. And it's never forgotten that. For half a century, it was under, you know, Kremlin control. And the current political leadership, people like Kaja Kallas, the Prime Minister, they have all family memories of this. I mean, Kaja Kallas's grandmother was sent to Siberia, her mother was sent to Siberia 74 years ago when she was just 6 months old. So when they see, for example, Ukrainian children being kidnapped and brought off to Russia because of an occupation, of course, that's what Vladimir Putin's indicted or being called for before the ICC. Or, I mean, they see their own past in that. You know, they saw the Russification of the country, their language, their culture. So it's a miracle that Estonia exists as a separate state. And when you listen to the statements of their prime ministers, of their foreign ministers, they very much know that they are lucky to exist separately. So they don't take freedom for granted. They've seen it taken away in their lifetimes, and it's only been granted to them again 30 years ago. So this all influences how they look at what's happening in Ukraine.
And you were there in 1992. What was it like at that time?
I was lucky enough to visit Tallinn in July 1992. The Soviet Union had just collapsed, and you know, Estonia had just got its independence. 2 weeks earlier, they had introduced their new currency, the kroon, which has now been replaced by the euro. They had their new constitution. There was a euphoria. They really thought that this day would never come, and I'll never forget that sense of happiness and euphoria because of what freedom brings. This was the birth of a country which had long been submerged. It was back on the map again. And they rushed to join the European Union and NATO because they realized that their freedom was occasioned by Russia's temporary weakness. They knew it was temporary. They knew that once the Kremlin would reassemble itself, once it would get back its resources, that it would try and reclaim the parts of the neighborhood that it considered to be, you know, theirs. And indeed, in recent times, people like Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president, has referred to the Baltic states as ours when he refers to Russia's empire. So any country that was formerly part of the Russian Empire and indeed has Russian-speaking minorities, as you mentioned earlier, considers itself next in line if Ukraine falls. And that's why they're determined to help Ukraine as much as it can for victory.
So this warning then from the Estonian Prime Minister, is it being heeded by the West and by the United States?
No, it's not, to put it bluntly. And that's why they've been repeating it from the beginning. I mean, the Prime Minister, Kaja Kallas, has been very on message. You know, even at the very start, when we were trying to wean ourselves as Europeans away from Russian energy, I mean, she said, look, this is costly. It involves sacrifices. But, you know, whereas gas is expensive, freedom is priceless. She always comes back to these fundamental core principles that she said, look, Ukrainians are fighting and dying unnecessarily. All we're being asked to do in Europe, in the Western world, is to reallocate our resources, to give more to Ukraine that would otherwise have been allocated somewhere differently in the budget. And Estonia has led the way in that respect. I mean, they spend 3.2% of their GDP on defense. They spend a quarter of GNP or GDP on supporting Ukraine. That's far more than any other country in terms of direct support for Ukraine. But they look at, you know, America, for example, where the $60 billion support was held up for 6 months in Congress. That has led to unnecessary loss of life in Ukraine, because essentially they're short of air defense systems to protect themselves. They look at the European Union, for example, which, again, this was an Estonian proposal. The European Union promised a million rounds of ammunition for Ukraine. It didn't deliver that, whereas Russia is reaching out to its allies, China, North Korea in particular, for ammunition, Iran for drones. And of course, because these are dictatorships, because they're authoritarian states, they have no problem in coming up with these supplies, because they have militarized their economies. But in democracies, there's been far less spending on these defensive items. And that's why Ukraine, even though it has very strong allies, it is on the back foot at this moment in the war against Russia.
Well, maybe if the United States isn't listening, the EU will. Kaya Kala might play a pivotal role in that, because I hear that she's destined for high office beyond Estonia. So are we looking at a situation where it might just fall on the EU to push back against Russia without the support of the United States, particularly if there's a Trump presidency?
Absolutely. That's a very firm possibility. And Vladimir Putin has been banking on that. That's one of the reasons why he's kind of senses an opportunity, a vulnerability, as it were. And I mean, Newt Gingrich, for example, senior Republican figure known to many of your listeners, I mean, he famously said in the not too distant past that Estonia, this is just the suburbs of St. Petersburg. They have a large Russian minority anyway. So what we certainly wouldn't risk going to war over somewhere that's a suburb of St. Petersburg. Donald Trump described the annexation of Crimea as very smart and as is openly admiring of Vladimir Putin. So this, of course, causes great concern that, you know, America would withdraw its support, from Central and Eastern Europe, because they don't really take seriously the EU as a military actor, and they would be left to fend for themselves, as they had been in 1938, 1939, 1940. And that's why this particular period of history resonates so strongly for Estonians. I mean, for them, there were two roads they could take when the Soviet Union collapsed. They firmly, put themselves in the European camp, but they're not sure that is reciprocated. They're not sure that their dedication to Europe, for example, is reciprocated by the European Union, for example.
All right, Donika, thank you very much. Donika O'Bacon there, Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government in DCU.